Hello, everybody. I'm Paul Menzel.
And I'm Jim Conlon, and we're the Old Dogs.
If you've got about 20 minutes, grab a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and join us.
In this episode, the Old Dogs ramble about dress code changes as we age. That leads us to a chat about new dress rules for Congress. We offer a new emotional support choice, chickens. We bring you another edition of Stump the Older Old Dog. And we include the latest musings of our chief aging officer, Kathleen O'Brien. The Old Dog's conversation is with Bill Freeman, a guy whose life-changing stroke didn't dull his mind or his sense of fun. Stay with us.
Paul, can you tell me again what's on your mind?
Oh, okay, certainly. In today's episode, we have a story about a senator named John Fetterman who has set a new low for sartorial splendor. He is a man that prefers wearing hoodies and shorts. When the Senate is in session. Mm-hmm. And it's caused some consternation from some people who I guess have invested a lot in ties that he doesn't want to play the game. So that got me started thinking about in my personal life as I have retired from any kind of constant employment. I don't wear ties anymore. I very rarely will wear a sport coat. I like going casual.
Okay. Well, is that a statement that you're making?
It sounded like it, didn't it?
Yeah,
and
if I'm
elected, I promise to wear shoes.
I thought you were going to say gall darn it at the end of that.
Yeah, really, that should. Well, that's kind of John Fetterman's approach. He's a man of the people, just a common guy, and that's the way he likes to be. I, on the other hand, as I've gotten older, I care less and less about impressing people.
Okay.
And I care less and less about social pressure. Mm-hmm. And I like being comfortable. And I guess for me, a coat, shirt, and a tie is not comfortable.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then, Paul. Is there any situation in which you would be willing to be uncomfortable for the sake of, let's say, conforming to the norm of the occasion?
Oh, I think I know where you're going. Yes, at our age, we do attend funerals quite regularly. And I will make that step of dressing up a little bit more for a funeral. But I generally do not wear a tie. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of funeral casual, I guess, is the style.
Okay, funeral casual. I think that's a new term.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go to extremes then. If you were finally honored by the Screen Actors Guild for all of the great work you've done on screen.
And that could happen.
A big banquet, and you were, going to make a speech. What would you wear to make that speech?
You know what? I don't think even that occasion would have me dress up. I would be looking for a more casual style because that's just where I am at in life right now. So when is this happening with the Screen Actors Guild?
I'm working on it.
Okay. I should probably get a suit then for that, huh?
Yeah, or at least write your speech in advance.
This pod nugget comes to us from the news magazine The Week. In late September, Chuck Schumer instructed the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms to stop enforcing the unofficial dress code of a coat and a tie in the Senate.
This appeared to be a favor to John Fetterman, the Democrat from Pennsylvania who preferred shorts and a hoodie for his work outfit. There was immediate pushback. Joe Manchin started a petition to restore the coat and tie. Susan Collins even threatened to show up in a bikini.
Oh, boy. Even though the senators have more important things to do, the issue occupied a lot of time and editorial space. It was like school kids trying to avoid doing their homework. Once they figure out what to wear, maybe they can get back to passing a budget, huh?
Or maybe not. I don't know. Does it take clothing to pass a budget?
Well, I think John Fetterman set a new low for casual clothing. I mean, the man kind of looks like an unmade bed when he's walking around.
C.J. Martin is a 25-year-old man with significant physical and cognitive challenges. In recent years, his mother, Amy Martin, noticed that he was experiencing severe depression. After doing some research, she came up with an unusual solution: emotional support chickens.
Well, it made sense. They're social, friendly, low maintenance. They live on chicken feed, which is as cheap as, well, chicken feed. A side benefit is a supply of fresh eggs. The problem is they live in Bangor, Maine, which doesn't allow backyard chickens.
So, Amy Martin went ahead and bought 6 chickens anyway. Caring for the chickens immediately improved CJ's depression, but the backyard chicken coop ran afoul of the city ordinance. After months of contesting the ordinance, the Board of Appeals voted unanimously to allow the chickens to stay. Happy ending.
Yeah, but I'd never heard of that before. Have you, an emotional support chicken?
I wouldn't even think of looking in that direction if I needed support.
Really? What's wrong with a dog or a cat or even a little gerbil? I mean, there's got to be some options there. Of course, you're not going to eat gerbil eggs, but...
Well, true. And what if somebody wants an emotional support elephant? How do you get that on the plane?
Now, that's true. Okay, folks, it's time for our foray into how common sense is among the old dogs. And that means another episode of Stump the Older Old Dog. The stumper, as usual, is me, Paul Menzel, and the stumpy is the wise ancient Jim Conlon. Jim, our topic today is interesting facts about animals, collected from the Interesting Facts website. Are you ready for another humiliation?
No, but I'm interested.
Okay. Question number one, true or false, cats can be allergic to humans.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm going to assume that's true.
My goodness, that's true. The condition is rare, but it does happen. Question two, true or false? One important difference between man and monkey is the ability to use tools.
False. Monkeys can use tools.
You say false?
Monkeys can use tools.
You are so correct there. Capuchin monkeys have been using stone tools for thousands of years.
And they have a record of it.
Yes, they do. In fact, they're unionized, a lot of them. You can hire a monkey to monkey around with your plumbing. Question three, true or false, ravens can remember human faces.
Oh, yes, that is true.
Man, you're on mark this day, huh? Mm-hmm. It is true. They can also use tools, and here's one, plan for the future. That doesn't make you give pause that they can plan for the future?
If I were a dog, I would have pause, yes.
Okay. Question four, true or false, koala fingerprints are almost indistinguishable from human fingerprints.
Doggone it, Paul. That's true.
Now, that was just a wild guess on your part.
Yes.
It's true. Gorillas and chimps also have fingerprints, but the koala is closest to a human print. So I guess the lesson there is if you're looking for murder suspects, don't rule out koala
include
bears.
Include koala bears, yep.
There you go. And I would say the older old dog, you got 4 correct out of 4.
Wow, that's a new record.
Might be time to retire, huh?
Okay, I retire. The old dogs think every organization that caters to our demographic should employ a chief aging officer to remind us why we think the way we do. Ours is Kathleen O'Brien, author of Reclaim Your Right to Grow Old and the website Grow Old, Be Happy.
Most people love butter. The more butter, the better. Not me. Even when I was a kid, I never put butter on my toast or baked potato. Butter was too greasy, too sickly yellow, too solid. I hated that stick of butter on the dinner table, looking worn with flecks of food bits stuck to it. For some reason, the plastic butter dish always ended up next to me. Today, butter doesn't just sit next to you. It's everywhere. In cookies, pastries, frozen vegetables, snacks, recipes for everything from brownies to hamburgers include butter. Big gobs of it. Grocery products are loaded with brown butter, organic butter, Irish butter, new, improved, with butter. How on earth did a fairly sane country evolve into such butter-consuming fanatics? I'll tell you how, because I lived through it. Butter on the table actually started disappearing in the early 1960s because of something called cholesterol, which people became worried about. Butter could raise your cholesterol and give you a heart attack. So in came margarine. It didn't taste as good, but at least it didn't have fatal cholesterol. Until people realized it had trans fats, which could shorten your life too. So in came canola oil. Everyone had a big jug of it in their cupboard. Finally, when I was in my 30s, olive oil, the basis of the sacrosanct Mediterranean diet, became de rigueur. But people miss their butter. And studies began to show that a little butter wasn't all that bad for you. So that, along with statin pills, meant butter could make a comeback. With a vengeance. Recently, I saw a recipe that called for flour, chocolate chips, and a cup of butter. Why not just sprinkle some chocolate chips over the butter and call it good? Who needs flour? Or French fries, for that matter. Next time you're at your favorite drive-thru, instead of the proverbial reminder to add fries, they may ask, "Want butter with that?" Maybe they already do.
Bill Freeman is a man who suffered a life-changing stroke. It resulted in his losing his job, but not his sharp mind or his sense of humor. Mostly confined to his home these days, Bill reaches out daily on Facebook with incisive comments about life, relationships, and politics. You should seriously consider friending him.
Well, Bill, remind me, how long has it been since we last met?
Probably been like 10 years.
Yeah. Well, since that time, a lot has happened in your life, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Way a lot.
What were you doing at that time? Just refresh my memory. What were you doing 10 years ago?
I was a customer service rep for a steamship company called Mediterranean Shipping. That's when I had, but what happened was, my left foot doesn't have much feeling, and one of the toes got infected, so I had to go to the hospital. I was in the hospital for about a month. And then it was kind of like, okay, well, I got to recoup and relax and do everything. Lost my job in behind that, and I was like, okay, how are we going to work this out? But when you ask about how my attitude affects me, is one of the things is like, well, I was going to work one day and I'm like, woe is me. And till I saw a lady that was on the bus in a wheelchair. She couldn't even walk. She didn't have legs. They cut her legs off. I'm like, okay, I'll take what I got. It's kind of looking at what's around me a lot and saying, okay, how does that fit in with me? And a lot of times it's when you get that, when you had those down times and you're really feeling like nothing's going your way, you just kind of have to look around and see who's doing, I hate to say it, who's doing worse than you are. Shut up and stick with what you got.
You do a lot of writing. You're writing all the time, right? What got you interested in particular in posting all of those little words of wisdom that you put on Facebook? You're there every day. And you always have something really positive to say, or else some kind of joke. Sometimes it's a political joke, right? But you've got a lot on your mind, and you are not afraid to express it. And some of the things you say probably are about as well said as I've ever seen. What makes you do that?
I a lot of times it's, I might be watching TV and say, ooh, that's interesting. And either think up a joke or a story or whatever and just say, okay, let me go put this on Facebook. Because I'm really of the opinion that whatever you do, like your podcast is going to be long out there after you're gone. After you and Paul are gone, it's still going to be out. And people are going to stumble across it and going to watch it. And they're going, ooh, these guys are good. Let me watch more. And it's kind of the same way as when I say something political or about domestic problems is my way of showing I'm not helpless. We're not helpless. You can say what you got to say. And normally I tell people, if I'm wrong, if you think I'm wrong, challenge me. Come at me. Let's have a discussion about it. Most of the times they don't, but I'm like, hey, come on. And there's when I'm putting up inspirational posts, it's usually me talking to myself, mm-hmm. encouraging myself, because it's quite easy for even the most positive person, an educated person, to fall prey to what's going on out there and become negative and go down some rabbit hole. And like I always tell people, it's very crowded in my head. There's a lot going on up there. You don't want to go up in there.
Bill, anticipating our conversation today, you had a serious health challenge that a lot of folks our age have had. Would you mind telling us, how did your stroke happen? How did you realize something was going on? And how have you come back from it?
How it happened was I was dumb. I got pissed off at the doctor I had maybe 3 years earlier because he said something I just rubbed me the wrong way. And I left. And I was kept telling myself, okay, find another doctor. And literally I had the names of three doctors in my area. And time had just run out. And I had my stroke. My grandfather on my mother's side, he had a stroke at 48. I was still a kid when we would come down to visit. I still see him with one of those old-fashioned push lawnmowers trying to mow this 4x4 little patch of grass. And, you know, that has been my driving force. I'm like, if he could do that with the way medical conditions were then, I could do far better.
How serious was the effects of the stroke for you?
I'm left side. My left side, I can only raise my left arm, but I can't extend my left side. I have nerve damage. As you go farther down toward my foot, I feel less and less. Matter of fact, with my left foot, I feel almost nothing. I think the worst of it was when I had my stroke and a coworker came to visit me in the hospital, and it just so happened that day, the therapist came in, two of them came in and said, okay, we're going to get up and walk. And I'm like, did they not tell you this side is not quite working out? Come on, you'll do it. Hardest 10 feet I ever walked in my life. And then I realized that I had a fear that if I fell, because I can't control my left arm, that I was afraid I was going to fall and break it. So I had to think of a way to fall. So, and it really did happen that we were at my apartment. My son was there. And I felt like I was going to fall. And I said, well, just let your knees come out from under you and fall straight down and grab your left arm and pull it across your body. And that's exactly what I did. But he said, it looked like you just sat down and squatted on the ground. I told myself I got to get a pedometer because every day I walk like a pirate. Matter of fact, I joked and said, you know, I could get on the cast of The Walking Dead. I don't have to, you know. All I got to do is put makeup on and let him go. He's fine.
Man, you have said so much, Bill. and you were wondering what the hell you were going to say.
Always.
The only thing I can say about this is that you don't have to worry about what you're going to say. You just go ahead and say it because it's coming out like nobody else I've ever heard.
I hate being bored, number one. Number two, it's really kind of not being able to be as physical. It is really kind of woken up how I think now. Because it's like, okay, can I do this? Okay, how can I do this? The group that I'm with, they'll tell you that I came in excited, just bouncing off the walls one day. And they're like, what happened? I said, well, the light switch in our kitchen was going out. And it just irked me to death to have to pay somebody to put in a new light switch. And so I got an X-Acto knife and screwdriver. And I'm like, okay, let's see if we can do this. I'm actually talking to myself. Okay, cut around, move the plate, unscrew it and move the plate. Okay, pull the old plug out and take the wires out. Remember, don't touch the wires. And I actually changed the light switch. And I'm like, okay, now if I can change the light switch, I can do anything.
I agree.
If I can do it with one hand, I can do anything.
Yeah.
That's an example of your attitude as opposed to, oh, crap, what can I do? You say, no, hey, what can I do?
How much do you charge to change light switches now, Bill?
Do you do plumbing, too? I could use some help there. Let me ask you, what advice do you have for folks that are facing what you have been facing? For folks that are coming back from a stroke or another form of physical problem, what's your advice for them?
Don't listen to everybody. You can't listen to everybody. They're actually trying to help, but most of the time they're kind of in the way. Like they tell you in the hospital, you're responsible. You just don't take the doctor's advice because he's a doctor. You think about what he's saying, and you're still responsible. I guess I take that whole attitude across the board that I'm still responsible. I searched on Facebook for groups where people would had strokes, and I started reading some of those comments, and I'm like, okay, I X'd out those groups because they were very negative. And then I started looking on YouTube for positive affirmations. There's a movie, I forgot what it's called, but they have a song, Never Gonna Stop. And most people think, well, that's for bodybuilders. No, it's for anybody. It translates to anybody. And so that's usually my national anthem that I play, that I'm never gonna stop. You have to find something, anything, that will make you get up in the morning and go through whatever you got to go through to do something different. You're not going to get any better. You're going to plateau. And in some cases, you might go down a little bit. It's always looking for something. You're always looking, no matter how small, you want to grab a hold to it like it's life or death and ride it as long as you can. And you'll start slowly seeing more and more and more. You have to have that drive, understand that it's your life. You got one life, live it. No matter what comes up, you have to fight through whatever it is you got to fight through to get to the other side. And yeah, I hit some walls. You're going to hit a wall. And you say, this isn't worth it. And might say, oh, let me try this. But you keep trying, you keep moving. Because I keep saying, okay, when death comes for me, it's going to have to hit a moving target. I'm not going to make it easy.
Like what you've been hearing? How about sharing the joy with your friends? We can always use more listeners. There are more episodes on the way, so stay tuned and keep howling at the moon.